Movie Buff Specialist Phil and John are back, and today we are going to be talking about Captain Marvel and Wonka, and this is going to be the last episode we're referred to as the Movie Buff Specialist, starting next week when we show up on the 27th to do Poor Things and Endgame. We are going to be the Cinema Specialist. We finally made the change in the name because with Alexa leaving the main Survivor show on this channel, I am now changing the name of the podcast to Strictly The Specialist. The channel will be Strictly The Specialist and everything will be branching off of that. And cinema has an alliteration and we no longer need to have the word buff in there to try to make it seem relevant. So we are now the Cinema Specialist moving forward. I would love to show you all the brand, but that would give away too much for other stuff. So we're going to wait it out and you're just going to have to wait till Wednesday. But yeah, here we are. Captain Marvel and Wonka, two movies we are going to be discussing tonight. One movie which John and I are going to disagree on, and another movie that we gave the exact same rating. So that should be fun. And as you all know, whatever I say will go. John will eventually cave to my will. So he wants to keep his job. He's a smart man, and that's what he's trying to do here. For the thousands and thousands of dollars I pay him every month, he needs to say the right things and can't get on my shit side. But here we are, John. We've almost now gotten to the point of COVID. With the Marvel movie. Yeah. We've almost hit it.
This, I guess next week is the last one that was released pre-COVID. Mm-hmm. Right?
I think so, right?
No. We have a little bit longer still. But we're almost on phase three. We have three movies left in phase three. We have this one tonight. We have Endgame. And then we have the inexplicable conclusion to phase three of Spider-Man Far From Home.
Yeah, I'm excited to see why that's the end of it and why it's not Endgame.
Yeah, I'm excited. I'm sure every person who is listening to us asking the exact same question.
Yeah, so it gets through Endgame and then there's no movies released in 2020 and Black Widow comes out in 2021. Fun little, here we go. Valir says, I'm curious what you guys think about Wonka, still deciding if I want to go see it. We're going to be talking about that one in a couple minutes here. Raptors 8415 says, happy holidays. Happy holidays to everybody. Our last podcast before Christmas and Boxing Day, right, John? You have Boxing Day coming up.
Yeah, that's right. In Canada, we just celebrate those boxes.
I love. So you do Christmas and Boxing Day back-to-back days? Are they both, they're both federal holidays in Canada?
No, Boxing Day is only a provincial holiday.
Interesting. Okay. Yes. Learn something new every day. That I've never known. Anyway, here we are. We're ready. We're going to break these down. But first, before we do that, I just want to ask, when you saw Wonka, did Disney's Desperation play before your movie?
Like a movie entitled Desperation or like every single Disney movie that's coming out in the next 2 years?
So in my theater,
yeah,
Disney is re-releasing in theaters for the first time Soul, Turning Red, and Luca.
Oh, I didn't get that before my viewing of Wonka.
So in January, they're releasing Soul. In February, they're releasing Turning Red. And in March, they're releasing Luca. And look, I'm all about movies getting released in theaters. I think these movies should have been released in theaters in the first place. But because of COVID and things like that, it really ruined it. However, this really shows that they are trying everything they can to get a little bit of extra money because these other things that have been failures for them that have not made them money, the sequel to Captain Marvel, is clearly starting to hurt them. And they're trying to figure out, okay, how can we get something? Can we make some sort of box office off of these other movies? Honestly, I'd probably go see Soul in theaters. I did not like Luca. I thought Luca was super bland. I didn't see Turning Red. I probably will at some point, but now I'm at the point where I'm just going through the Disney animated movies in order. But I thought that was really interesting. Clearly, Disney is trying to get a quick hit of cash in the beginning portion of this year that is going to be 2024. So I thought that was interesting.
If only Disney thought, hey, why don't we release some of our actual classics in theaters to celebrate our 100th anniversary? That might get them a bit more cash.
I'm telling you, man, because with these Fathom events, when they release the Studio Ghibli stuff, people go. Yeah. I mean, that's why they keep doing it. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, Valier says, I saw that they aren't going to release the new Snow White in theaters now. Is that true? I thought they were still.
I haven't heard anything about that.
Okay. Link us. Link us, Valier. I need to see the link. I know that it got pushed back significantly, but All right, let's talk about Wonka first. Really, we should talk about Captain Marvel first, because I don't know if this podcast is going to go a full hour, because I might end it in about right after Wonka. But let's talk about Wonka first. The third Wonka movie, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, unless there's some random one that was thrown in there that I didn't know about. We have obviously the original classic with Gene Wilder, Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. We have the Tim Burton atrocity because the man doesn't know how to remake movies, which is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory. And now we have Wonka from Paul King, who made the first two Paddington movies and is writing Paddington in Peru, which is coming out next year. Wonka. What did you think about Wonka?
I went into this movie with really tempered expectations. I kept asking myself, why are we making this movie? What's the purpose of this movie? But I also kept telling myself, Paul King's behind it. Mm-hmm. And what Paul King did with the two Paddington movies is incredible. So I went in with like a little bit of hope for this movie. And honestly, it still kind of surprised me with how delightful I found it.
Yeah, it was way better than I thought it was going to be. My expectations were so low. When I saw the original trailer for this movie, I thought it was going to be terrible. And then I saw it was Paul King, and I said, okay, the guy's only made the two Paddington movies, so he's got to, maybe he's branching out, maybe it won't work. But his style, it works, and he knows how to make a family movie. He just gets how to make a family movie. And yeah, there were a lot of parts of Wonka that fell flat for me. A couple of the songs didn't work for me. I wasn't totally in love with Timothée Chalamet, which was interesting because I really liked Timothée Chalamet, but I was kind of iffy on him in the lead role. But the side characters are great. And I love the trio of chocolatiers. Keegan-Michael Key is eating up this role. Like, he really does just like ham it up the entire time. I thought like Jim Carter was phenomenal. Noodle is very good. I don't know the name of her actress, but there was a lot of really good side characters in this movie, and the world felt pretty fleshed out. I liked the magic of it all, that it didn't give reason to why Wonka was able to do so many things. He just wanted to be a magician and, you know, all of that. And it had a whimsy to it that around this time of year is fun to watch. And I was very entertained the entire time. And when it was over, I had a smile on my face and I was laughing really hard. And I have to give this shout out, because some people aren't going to know, but I could not figure it out while I was watching the movie for about 10 minutes. And then finally it clicked in my head, and I've never been happier. Patterson Joseph gets the role of Slugworth. And I could not figure out why I recognized Patterson Joseph. He is Holy Wayne from the first season of The Leftovers. And I was so happy when that finally clicked in my brain, because it's so nice to see that man getting getting some roles. He is phenomenal as Holy Wayne in the first season. Creepy as all hell. But I just thought that was great. So yeah, I really enjoyed this movie. I didn't love it. I didn't love everything about it. But in terms of would I watch this movie again at Christmas time next year? Absolutely. 100%.
Yeah, it was fun. I just found myself while I'm watching the movie, there was a point probably about two thirds of the way, right before it gets like super sad, that I realized I had been smiling for the entire movie up to that point.
Yeah.
And like, that is actually a huge accommodation for a film, especially like this family oriented film that's supposed to be feel good, that it has these drastic turns in emotion, that when there is a downer segment, you actually realize how much you've been enjoying what happened before it. Now, it didn't get back to those heights after that segment, in my opinion, where like the end didn't feel like it matched quite as high the like that whimsy that you were talking about of the first like two thirds of the movie, but it was enjoyable. I had no idea this was a musical going into it. Probably should have, but had no idea that's what it was coming down to.
Yeah, that was funny to me, because when it first started and they started singing, my wife turned to me and she goes, "Did you know this was a musical?" And I said to her, I was like, "Yeah, because the original one had some music in it." But really, I didn't know. I wasn't expecting it to be full-on musical, because I guess the original Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory has the Golden Ticket song, which is great, Pure Imagination, which is great. It has a couple songs, but I wouldn't classify that movie as a full-blown musical. It has musical segments, but it's not a musical. This was a musical. There were songs that just appeared out of nowhere, and you could tell some of them were really good. Some of them fell flat for me. but you could tell that everything was just taking inspiration from Pure Imagination. And when it finally got to Pure Imagination at the end, I was like, there we go. We're back. Thank you. Because Pure Imagination is just an absolutely phenomenal song and really underrated. Like, I feel like Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, the original, is underrated. And that song is seriously underrated.
Yeah, I agree. I did feel it was almost a little too present in this movie, though. Not like we only get it at the very end of the film, but it's very present in the score of this movie. And I don't know, I almost felt like I wanted that detachment from the Gene Wilder, because it's just reminding me, oh yeah, remember when Wonka was played by Gene Wilder and how much charisma he had? Because like you said, Timothée Chalamet is kind of one of those weird parts of this movie, because there are moments where he's really into this characters, and there's moments where he just kind of falls a little flat.
That's how I felt too. I mean, some of the one-liner jokes that were in there don't work because it's Timothée Chalamet. If they're in the hands of a different, like there's the one part where he's talking about, you want it with nuts, you want it a little bit crazy. Yeah. If that was any other actor, I think it works better. I mean, I get why they went Timothée Chalamet. I'm not saying he was bad in this, but he did not have the charisma that Gene Wilder had. Now, granted, it's going to be hard to live up to that. Thank God he wasn't whatever Johnny Depp was in the second one, because that was just an atrocity. I mean, I don't know if you actually like that movie or not. I don't know. I just know I personally
I do not.
I really hate that movie and I really hate that performance. But yeah, I mean, really, who was your favorite character in this movie out of all the characters?
That's a tough one. It might have been the accountant?
Yeah, Jim Carter. Yeah, so I'm watching Downton Abbey for the first time right now. He's very good in Downton Abbey, yeah.
I think he was... It's like that moment where he like eats the chocolate and then all of a sudden he's on board and he like kind of has this like money love to him, but like it never actually explicitly states it and it doesn't go overboard on that type of characteristic, which I feel like some characters do when they like money. And he was just fun. He was fun. And a lot of these side characters are fun. Who was yours favorite?
Hands down, 100%. This man is Paul King, and this man needs to just keep making movies together. It's Hugh Grant as the Oompa Loompa.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, Hugh Grant as the Oompa Loompa. I love Hugh Grant in Paddington 2. I think he is an absolutely incredible villain in that movie. So over the top, so much fun. Honestly, it sounds crazy. That's an Oscar-worthy performance, what he does in Paddington 2. And I loved him in this movie, how hard he leaned into it. I like that the one thing I will say, and I agree with you that for some of this, it did feel like, remember when Gene Wilder did this? But then part of me now is also saying, but it is understanding that we have the nostalgia for that classic. And I love the first introduction of the Oompa Loompa when he says, I'm about to sing you a song that is so catchy, it is never going to leave your head. And he starts doing the Oompa Loompa song. I really like the part on the boat. I thought it was even great when he walks into the castle at the end, and just the image of a really tiny Hugh Grant with Hugh Grant's face walking alongside a gigantic Timothée Chalamet. It just cracked me up the entire movie. So that was my favorite. And I was really concerned from the trailer that the Oompa Loompas were going to be too much of this movie, because they're the worst part probably of Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the remake. Yeah. They're not in as big of a part in Willy Wonka. They show up just so they can sing their songs every time a kid dies. But I like what they did with it in this one, where he doesn't come in until later in the movie. He's hinted at, because we're talking about the fact that a little orange man is showing up. And by the time he comes, and then the little bits he gets, what's he in, four scenes? They all really, really, really work. And I appreciated that. And I like that. Mm-hmm. And, you know, if they do end up making another movie off of these, I don't think this has been that much of a box office success. But if they do end up making more of these, I would absolutely be down with Hugh Grant being the duplicated Oompa Loompa all over the place.
Well, I don't know if Hugh Grant would be, because Hugh Grant said being like doing this role was one of the worst experiences he's had in a movie.
Why?
I don't know. I didn't dig into it enough, but something about it he just did not jive with.
Was it from the directing, or was it what he was actually having to do?
I couldn't imagine it was the directing, because this is his second movie he's done with Paul King.
Yeah, so it doesn't make sense.
So I think it must have been just something like the mocap or whatever had to be done for the Oompa Loompa itself.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know. That's interesting. I didn't know that. Mm-hmm. And yeah, the movie made $39 million in its opening weekend, which isn't great.
It isn't bad.
But it's not bad. The second Hunger Games was $5.8 million, and that was second that weekend. So really, it was just a down box office at the weekend, which makes sense. It's the week before Christmas. People are probably doing a little bit more shopping than anything else. What was the Wonka budget? The Wonka budget was $125 million. So it's got its work cut out for it, but I'm going to be honest. What's coming out in the coming days, Aquaman 2 clearly isn't going to do well because they just remade the trailer and they made the trailer worse somehow.
Yeah.
You have the Iron Claw, which will get a little bit. Migration will get a little bit. Anyone But You will probably get more of like the teen, early 20s crowd. American Fiction, it's a wide release, but I don't think that's going to bring as much money in as people are as they're hoping, even though it's going to be probably the best movie out of all those. The Color Purple. The fact that it's a musical right now, I don't think is really going to draw people in. Ferrari isn't getting the Oscar buzz, so that won't work. Same thing with The Boys in the Boat. This could make another $30 million this weekend and then make another $30 million the weekend after. That's the crazy part.
The most important thing to know about this movie this weekend is Christmas. Christmas is one of the biggest movie like cinema-going days of the year. This is the only family movie playing.
Let me look. I mean, Aquaman kind. Well, Migration is a family movie, but it's animated, so it's a different kind of family movie.
Yeah,
but it is a family movie.
But this is a family movie that's playing on nostalgia that people are going to take their kids to because of that nostalgia, and either grandkids to because of that nostalgia at this point. Yeah. I think it's just hitting the right demographic that it's potentially setting up for a big weekend this weekend.
Yeah, we'll see what ends up happening. I mean, today or on Wednesday, it made $4 million. That's a pretty big Wednesday. I mean, The Boy and the Heron made $1 million. Making $4 million on a Wednesday, not on a holiday week, because next Wednesday is probably going to be a bigger Wednesday because people that week between Christmas and New Year's is just, you know, it's an abyss. But I feel like $4 million on one day to me sounds good. It made $6 million on Tuesday and $4 million on Monday. So it made $39 million this weekend. And it's already made $14 million this week. And that doesn't count whatever it did today. So it's already up to $3 million. $14 million during the week after a $39 million weekend is crazy. Because you always think they do 2.5 times, right? So that's like what the rule of thumb is. So it'd be 78 and then another 20, let's say. So that's looking at about $100 million. But if it's already made $14 million during the week, you'd have to think that when you add up the weekend that's coming with this week, I wouldn't be surprised if this hits $70 million by the end of Christmas Day.
Yeah, neither would I.
Sorry, that's getting sidetracked, but I love to talk about that and look at that because it's kind of fascinating. And I think this movie has more legs because there's not as much coming out. So if it does end up cracking $150 million or something along those lines, this is a movie that will certainly get a sequel. And like I said, I would be okay with it. Maybe Hugh Grant doesn't want to do it. But it's made $166 million worldwide. So I think it's probably come close to already succeeding in their eyes to make that much worldwide.
I also think it's a movie that's going to get a lot better reception the longer into a run it goes because of word of mouth. Because I think a lot of people had the same reservations about this film that we had.
Yeah.
Right? What's the point of this film? I don't know. Like, even the trailers weren't that great.
No, I thought they were bad.
But like you and I, knowing that Paul King did this, who and us holding the Paddington films in such high revere, we knew to check this movie out no matter what, right? Mm-hmm. And I think as time goes on, more and more people are going to find out that people don't think this movie sucks. Because even like just talking to my friends, I was like, hey guys, I'm going to go see this movie. Does anyone want to come? And all of them were like, nah, we'll let you tell us how it is. And I'm like, man, you guys kind of missed out on a good movie.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, even like when I'm looking here at Valiers, he says, I'm curious what you guys think about it. Still deciding if I want to go see it.
Exactly.
Well, we like it. I would recommend going to see it. It's not going to blow your socks off. This isn't going to be a movie that you're going to say, whoa, what a masterpiece. I can't believe it. But it's a good watch. It is certainly worth the watch. And, honestly, so John and I are going to be doing our year in review on next Friday. This could end up being, I don't remember if we even had a category for it, but this could end up being my biggest surprise because I enjoyed it a lot more than I thought I was going to. And every movie, when I look at like my list for this year of my top, you know, well, this will be my 24th movie. This is the only one that I didn't expect to like that I ended up liking. I expected to like Barbie and Strays and Dream Scenario and A Haunting in Venice and all of that stuff. I didn't necessarily expect to like this one. And right now, I'd put this as my 9th favorite movie. Or no, I'm sorry, 10th favorite movie of the year. Oh. This would take over the 10th place spot from A Haunting in Venice and end up one spot behind John Wick Chapter 4, which is my highest rated 3-star movie.
Yeah, it seems about right. I mean, I believe I also put it somewhere similar. I put it a little lower,
but I've also have seen so many more movies.
Twice as many movies as you. I have it at 19 right now.
Out of how many?
50.
Yeah. So, I mean, you have it still like same percentage wise because I'm 10 out of 24.
Yeah.
So almost the exact same percentage.
Yeah. And the movies I have ahead of it are kind of like movies you would expect me to have ahead of it. So, yeah, it surprised me.
Yeah.
When I was looking for like where to rank it, it's like it's in that same realm as Strays. I think it's actually kind of a good comparison of this movie that, you know, you'll probably enjoy it, but it might surprise you a little bit in how much you enjoy it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I actually think Strays might have been a deeper movie. I can't believe I just said that out loud, but I think it might have actually been a deeper movie. Yeah. But I did enjoy this more. And I think this one, it was just charming the entire time. And that's hard to pull off. And even though Chalamet wasn't exactly the most charming, the movie itself was charming the whole time. I like the set design. It kind of had that Paddington feel where they were drawing, you know, her dream. And I like the part where they're all talking through the windows and they're opening that up. It was like Paddington mixed with Wes Anderson. That was kind of thrown in there, but then it's musical, where it's very stylized, but not to the point of how stylized Wes Anderson movies can be. It felt like it was a little bit more purposeful, more storybooky than how these Wes Anderson movies can get. So that's just how I feel about that. But it was still a very, very enjoyable movie.
I feel like it really tried to capture the world of Roald Dahl. And it did it in a way that we haven't seen a Roald Dahl adaptation do in a while.
Yeah. What was the last Roald Dahl adaptation?
They made that Witches movie with Anne Hathaway that got all that flack for whatever in like 2021 or something like that.
Couldn't even tell you. There you go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I mean, once it catches flack, I just turn my eardrums off. I'm not the guy. Like until we started doing this Marvel series, I try to go out of my way not to watch movies I don't like. I've watched more movies I don't like this year than any other time because of this series we've done. It's still been fun. I like to have my finger on the pulse and actually have an opinion on these things. And man, I can now speak very confidently on Captain Marvel, which is great. I love that. I love that I can do that. So what else you got? Because I know I want to turn this over to you and let you kind of throw out your ideas for the next 7 minutes rather than me blabbing. And then I get to the end and you go, well, there's a couple more things I want to say. So
saying
your things.
We haven't even talked about Olivia Colman in this movie yet, who is just like a delightful villain, right? Like this prototypical female villain you have in these type of movies, you know, strong Cockney accent, made up not to look very pretty, mean, like those type of like stereotypical roles. And she's so funny in that role. And the whole plot revolving around the setup to make what's his face out as a aristocrat. So she like Beecher, and then like it's so funny. It's so funny. Everything going on. And it still has like the ridiculousness of Roald Dahl. When Timothy Chalamet pulls out the contract and then says, yeah, it looks good, signs it anyways. It was a weird thing to do. It's actually one of the plot points in this movie. I'm not completely sold on this idea that Willy Wonka just couldn't read.
Also, Steve put it in his review. So his mother didn't teach him how to read, but then left him a note.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think about that.
Yeah. Yeah, leave it to Steve. Steve will always give you good stuff. He'll give you the big ones. So what this reminded me of was a mix between Les Mis and Oliver. That's what that whole thing felt like. If you haven't seen Oliver, it had that same feel of kind of what Ron Moody's character is doing. I forget what the name of the character is, even though every theater kid right now is screaming at me going, it's the, you know, but I can't remember. But the Ron Moody character in the movie, it reminded me very much of that. And it reminded me of in the Les Mis from 2012, the Helena Bonham Carter, Sacha Baron Cohen.
Yes. Thing,
where it's like, we're going to scam you. You have no way out. This is your life now. So I did appreciate that. And I appreciated the allusions to other movies, you know, that were like kind of British classics or European classics, and kind of hinting at, you know, because we don't know the time period of this movie. There is no time period of this movie. There is no real location of this movie, but we get the little hints throughout, which is nice.
I think that's one of the things that I've always enjoyed about the Wonka movies, though, right? Like, even if we look back at the original Willy Wonka, like, you can't tell when it takes place, which gives it that timelessness, which is why it still stands up, what, 50 years later now?
52.
Yeah, right? Like, it's and it still holds up because it has that timelessness, other than, like, some of the haircuts and stuff like that, right?
And the way they talk about television.
Yes, that as well. But this one also captures that timelessness, but it does it in a way where it just doesn't show you anything specifically. They don't even mention what city they're in. Like, you assume it's London, but they never actually say.
Yeah. Which I think is good, because then you don't have to, like, you don't have to deal with the people being like, oh, that's not what this is like. That's not what this is like. You know, people start to look too seriously into movies sometimes, and that's not a good thing. Next, you got 3 minutes.
I have 3 minutes. The effects in this movie were much better than I thought they would be. They worked a lot better.
Yeah, I agree. I thought that they looked better than I thought, just because, like, also as we get into these Marvel movies that are a little bit more up to date, some of them look really bad. And so it is nice to see a budget go toward some things that look really good. There were certain parts that didn't look amazing. But for the most part, I was really into the visual effects of this movie.
Keegan-Michael Key is hilarious in this movie. I don't like the fact that it went the fat joke route. I mean, I've been vocal about that in the past. Not something I like seeing in films, really. But Keegan-Michael Key chews that role so much, and he is so funny.
Yeah, and I know you're very vocal about the fat suit stuff, and I get it. But I also think in this one, the whole point of it is he keeps getting bribed with the candy. And
yeah,
if you eat a lot of candy, you're going to gain weight. And I did think what I found very fun about that was you never actually see him sign anything or do anything or whatever. Every time you see him, he's just a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger, a little bit bigger. And it's like you're seeing his corruption, right? Because that was always kind of the joke, is you'd be fat and wealthy back in the day because you were corrupt. And all the politicians were fat and wealthy, and all the cops were fat and wealthy. How are they getting all that money? Well, they were getting it for being corrupt. And I think that was a very fun visual of just every time. And by the end of it, was the car shrunk because he's just eating all this chocolate. When they're dropping off the box now is a giant box that's twice the size of his car, because it's just so absurd. But yeah, Keegan-Michael Key is chewing that up. And that song, I don't remember what the name of the song is, but the song between Slugworth and Finkelgruber and Prodnos, where they're convincing him that they want the food or the chocolate. Yeah. That is the best part of the movie. I loved that part. And I thought that was really cool. And I wouldn't be surprised if that got nominated for an Oscar at the end of the day. I don't know if it made the shortlist. The shortlist came out
today. I don't believe it did.
Did anything from Wonka make that shortlist?
I don't think so.
Really? That's interesting.
Earlier, right?
You did. Let me look. You bring up your next point and we'll look at that.
But I mean, just with that, the songs, a lot of them did work though. The one in the laundry that like introduces it, funny, and really funny how they brought it up again. It's that song that keeps coming up time and time again in the movie with the refrains and everything and the reprises. And it works really well the way that they do that. And the way it's used to like introduce misery, it's like a Hard Knock Life from Annie, really, right?
It is.
It's the same type of feel. But they use it, and the way the reprises come in, it really works to kind of shift these characters. And I think that's the important thing, is that a lot of the times when we get musicals, we get song, like in modern movies, we get songs that just don't do anything. They're just kind of there. I'm like kind of looking at like the live action remake of Beauty and the Beast, where they put that song in that isn't in the Broadway musical. They just wrote an Alan Menken just wrote a new song for it, and it just doesn't fit the movie at all. It just doesn't do anything to progress anything. This movie, all of the songs had purpose. They were there for character development or plot progression, and it felt good because of that.
Yeah, and Wonka didn't get nominated for any songs. It can't. It did not make the cut to do any of that. Yeah.
Interesting.
Yeah. Okay. There you go. But yeah, I agree with you. The songs kind of kept on. They kept developing, and there was a careful hand put into this movie. This wasn't a movie that was made just to make money. Yeah, they wanted to make money, but this was a movie that was made with an artistic sense behind it, and that's ultimately what sets it apart.
Yeah, and Paul King does such a good job of keeping jokes going throughout his movie and having a payoff. The zookeeper joke is so funny in this movie. I couldn't help it when we finally get the conclusion of that joke. I'm not even going to mention the conclusion of the joke or what the joke is because it's so funny. Rowan Atkinson as this corrupt bishop, also hilarious. It was fun. It was fun. And even the parts that I was like, okay, we're getting a little bit. I did think the third act, I don't know. I can't exactly put a thumb on how exactly I felt for the third act, but it, like I said, it didn't quite do it the way the rest of the movie did. But there was also a heist scene in this movie, and heists are fun.
Which he needs to have. I mean, his heist scenes are really good. I mean, the prison breakout in Paddington 2 is phenomenal. I actually think this might be our best discussion of not spoiling. Good for us. You did a good job, John. Don't ruin it now. But it definitely sets up for the potential for a sequel. If they want to make a sequel, they absolutely can. And I would not be surprised at all if we get one. I think we're going to get one. Especially since Timothy Chalamet is only going to get hotter now that Dune 2 is going to come out this year. So there you go. And we convinced Valiers to go see it.
Yes, we did it. I hope you enjoy it as well, Valiers.
Well, now let's talk about Veers.
Okay.
Okay. Yeah, John.
I know.
This was the first time. This was the first time that if we weren't doing this podcast, I would have turned it off.
Yeah.
I would have turned it off. I would have turned it off, John. I would have turned it off. This was a chore. And if they allowed 0-star reviews on Letterboxd, this would have been a 0-star movie. It would have been my 0-star movie with Planet of the Apes and The Lady in the Water. And I would have had to start thinking about what other movies should be 0 stars. But this would have been a 0-star movie. I despise this movie. Now I'm not going to just harp on it, and I'm going to let you do your talk because you gave it 2.5 stars. Yeah. And you, I want to let you have your moment here. But I was like physically ill watching this movie. I seriously felt like the next plague was coming or something, because I was just sitting there and I'm like, am I starting to feel sick? Am I getting nauseous? Am I getting lightheaded? Do I wish I had a bout of diarrhea right now so I could go sit on the toilet instead of doing this for the next 4 hours of my life? That's kind of how I felt while watching this movie. So, John, explain to me why this isn't as bad as I am making it out to be. Because I am telling you right now, John, I would have rather had 4 hours of diarrhea than watch this movie. So continue.
Okay. I think a lot of Captain Marvel comes down to how offensive you find a movie being completely unoffensive.
Well, because considering I hate Hugo, maybe this is why.
I know. This movie, I don't mind this one. Like, again, I put it 2.5. I think I have it right over Iron Man 3. And the mentality I tell myself, and the reason why I have it there, this movie isn't fantastic. It's not great. It doesn't really have good moments putting it over the top of these other MCU movies, but I don't find it as offensively bad as some of the other things that are contained in these Marvel movies. Like with Iron Man 3, that third act, horrid.
Yeah.
Right? And it's like, when I'm sitting here trying to evaluate how I felt about the movie, the worst thing I felt about the movie is that I didn't feel about the movie.
I envy you. So much. I really do. I wish I could have felt nothing. By the Wallflowers. I'm sure you all know that song, One Headlight, because that was their big hit. They also have a song called I Wish I Felt Nothing, and that is exactly how I feel. The Wallflowers got me. If I could have just played that for the hour and 56 minutes that this movie is, or whatever it was, I would have been totally
at least it's a shorter Marvel movie, because we've had very long ones, and we have a very long one coming up next week.
This was the longest 2 hours and 4 minutes I've ever experienced watching a film. I'm not joking. Like, I'm not exaggerating this. And I'm going to talk about why I felt this way, but this was the longest 2 hours and 4 minutes I've ever felt watching a movie. I was struggling so bad, John, so bad. I couldn't handle the look of this movie, the pitch blackness that is the first 25 minutes before she gets to Earth. I had no idea.
I can't defend that.
What'd you say?
I can't defend that.
Yeah.
It is so dark in the first 20 minutes of this movie.
It's insane. I had no idea what the plot of this early portion of the movie was or why I cared. Now, I get they were trying to keep you in the dark a little bit because she also was kind of like, I don't remember things, whatever. Mm-hmm. But it just kept going and continued to want to confuse me just for the sake of confusing me. And I feel like there was a better order to tell this story in. And by the time they started to do the reveals, I was already so frustrated. I felt like the dialogue in this movie, that was my big thing. The dialogue in this movie is atrocious. It is atrocious. And look, I hate to be that person who calls out like writers and stuff, so I won't call them out by name. The writing in this movie is horrible. And, you know, nobody, they're not going to listen to this podcast, and none of their family members are going to listen to this podcast. And sometimes when you're making art, you have to be mean, especially when the people made millions of dollars to make this movie. If you made millions of dollars to be this bad at your job, I'm allowed to be mad at you. And that shouldn't affect my future. And I got to be honest, the writing in this movie is abysmal. There's nothing funny about their dialogue. There's nothing funny about their banter. It just goes back and forth. My head was smashing. If I was wishing that I was, instead of laying with a pillow behind me, that there was a wooden block behind me, so I could have just kept smashing my head against it, because this was so bad. The little back and forth between Fury and Captain Marvel, it's like, oh my gosh, how is that what the final iteration of this was? How was there not a rewrite on this to make it better? I just couldn't handle that. The Ben Mendelsohn thing, I get it's a neat little twist, but it is so stupid. And the makeup on those characters is so bad. It's so bad. I don't care what anybody says. It's so bad. It frustrated me to no end. And it just, the side characters were bad. And I don't know if you know this or not, John, but Captain Marvel in this movie is a woman. Okay. I don't know if you know this. So let's play I'm Just a Girl by No Doubt and really hammer that home as hard as we can for the sake of having that. Don't ruin No Doubt for me, because that's one of the few things that we still have. Do not do this, Marvel. Do not do it. What are you going to say?
Okay. I will agree. The decision to have I'm Just a Girl play there is probably one of the worst decisions we've had in a Marvel movie. It is so heavy-handed. I don't know if you realize this. Did you realize the rest of the very 90s music that was played in this was all by female artists?
There's Nirvana in it, though.
There is Nirvana at that one
point. There is Nirvana. Yeah.
Right before we get I'm Just a Girl.
It is. Yeah, there's a Nirvana song.
Which is weird. Right before that. Because it's actually the only diegetic music in the movie.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Is Nirvana. And I guess that's because you can't make a movie that takes place in 1995 without Nirvana.
You have to have Nirvana.
Of course.
You have to.
Doesn't matter that there were better artists on posters or on t-shirts in this movie that weren't in
I was really stoked when they kept showing Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness. That album had a huge impact on my life. And if you just listen to, if you never listen to Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness, just listen to the first two songs on the first album, which is Melancholy and the Infinite Sadness directly into Tonight Tonight. It's a piano ballad where there's no music or anything, and it leads right into a massive rock song. And it is absolute perfection. Billy Corgan just knocked it out of the park back then. Go ahead, continue. You're up.
And like, they really tried. There was one point while I was watching, it's like, they're really emphasizing the 90s here. Mm-hmm. So much so that Stan Lee's cameo in this movie, his last movie, Stan Lee died after this, which is why we get the thank you, Stan, which is why something we haven't even talked about, but like the Marvel logo is usually scenes from the characters
and this one was Stan Lee.
But it's all Stan Lee this time.
That actually got me a little emotional, and I have no feelings really towards a lot of these movies. But, you know, Stan Lee really did change the culture in a huge way. So it's hard not to get emotional over that. Even if, unfortunately, even if his big thing is, you know, his whatever, In Memoriam is essentially before what I believe is the worst Marvel movie I've seen to this point.
Yeah, but his cameo in this movie
is so good.
Well, it's him on his way to filming Mallrats.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny. And there are some people who are going to get that and some people who will never get that.
Yeah.
But the people who get it, like, that is such a neat little Easter egg that, like, plants it here. I think one of the things with this movie is it doesn't properly set up the Kree. Mm-hmm. And that's because the Kree have already been introduced in the MCU through Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D.
Yeah.
Dude, the TV show that ran on ABC for seven seasons.
Before you continue with the seven seasons of Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., they don't know the name of it is S.H.I.E.L.D. Why are they calling it S.H.I.E.L.D.? That's the whole point in the first Iron Man movie, is that they keep calling it by its full name and they say, we're working on the name. And then at the end of it, they say S.H.I.E.L.D. Why are they saying S.H.I.E.L.D. this entire movie, John?
Because they retconned that like 7 years before this movie came out.
I don't care. That's stupid. That makes no sense. Stop. Like, you ruined it. Stick to your guns, kids. Stick to your guns. Well, like, it's the little things. It's just pure laziness.
Yeah. I mean, it is. But it had already been established that they'd been referring to things as S.H.I.E.L.D. prior to that, outside of Iron Man. I hadn't actually realized it until I read your review.
That's what I'm here for, John. Rachel. I think it was actually in Rachel's review. It wasn't Rachel's review. Because my review was very basic. And I will read my review for you all, just in case you didn't see it over on Letterboxd. This is truly all I could say about this movie. I've seen thousands of movies. Sorry. Yeah, I did pluralize it. I've seen thousands of movies. I don't think I could name 10 that I hated more than this. And I have thought about it.
I don't.
And I still can't. I can't. I literally can't. But anyway, continue.
But the Kree is established, and there are Easter eggs because of that Kree establishment in this. In Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., I'm going to spoil this TV show from like over a decade ago now. I know, Tara. It's only the first season, don't worry. But it's actually pretty early in the first season, too. We find out Coulson is alive again, and the reason he is alive is because of Kree blood. Like, exactly what happened with Carol Danvers in this movie happened to Coulson, which is why Coulson is also in this movie as a character, as the new guy.
But Coulson's also, like, it would make sense for him to be the new guy because this is taking place for Iron Man.
It does, but the decision to have him there is established through this connection to the Kree.
Gotcha. Sort of.
Yeah. Well, it's confusing because the Kree aren't fully out there. And let me tell you, what a waste of Annette Bening.
I was just going to say that. That was going to be my next point as I stare at Poor Things, which is what we're going to do next week. I pulled that up just to see what its rating is on Letterboxd, and it has a 4.3 right now, which really gets me excited for that. But sorry, Annette Bening is one of my favorite actresses of all time. Mm-hmm. She's in my 1B movie of all time, which is American Beauty. And she's in 20th Century Women, which I think is one of the finest female performances of all time. And the reason I say female is because it is, you know, when you look at best actress, it's one of the finest performances in general of all time. Her character in that is absolutely phenomenal. Unfortunately, Mike Mills movies don't get the credit they deserve. Beginners and 20th Century Women and Come On, all deserve to be seen by more people than have seen them. But when you make me hate Annette Bening, you have done something so bad that like it's unforgivable. And the scene of like when they're doing the reveals and Captain Marvel is pushing back and being whatever she is and Jude Law takes away and all that. It's just like, how much nonsense can we throw? How much nonsense can we throw? How much nonsense can we throw? And it was driving me insane. Valier says the cat is the best part. The cat is the best part, but you know, that's like, I really, really, really hate mushrooms. So that's like, well, the part where the mushroom didn't taste exactly like a mushroom was my favorite part of the mushroom. It still sucked because it was a mushroom. I'd still rather be doing anything else. The cat is kind of funny. And then they do the cat thing like 12 times and you're like, well, they aren't. That is their joke. But I don't know. I just, this movie just made me so mad. And this was, you know, we did a Godzilla Minus One last week, and we did, what was the Marvel movie we did last week? What was the last Marvel movie?
Ant-Man and the Wasp.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. And I enjoyed that. And I felt like they really used their budget wisely. And I feel like in this one, it was, we have a huge budget. We're going to make Captain Marvel a woman, and that's what we're going to do. And it felt like all they cared about.
To be fair, Captain Marvel is a woman.
Oh, is Captain Marvel a woman? I had no idea, honestly.
So, like, originally the character was male. Like, Mar-Vell was originally a male character. Yeah. But by this point in, like, Marvel Comics, Captain Marvel is a woman.
Oh, okay. See, I don't know that. So that doesn't matter. But I felt like that is what this movie was focused on. It was.
And it's unfortunate.
And I don't think that works. And honestly, like, you know, we just talked about great side characters from Wonka. The side characters in this movie were cringeworthy, man. Like her buddy, the woman who plays the other 007 in James Bond.
Monica.
I loved her in James Bond in No Time to Die. I thought she was phenomenal. I'm sorry, I can't think of her name. What is her name?
What is it? Lashana Lynch.
Is it Lashana Lynch? Yeah. Okay. So she is so good in that movie. She is such a waste in this movie. Ben Mendelsohn starts off mildly interesting, and then just his voice, while it's coming out of Green Goblin, most generic Green Goblin I've ever seen in my entire life, what am I looking at? And you know, the Annette Bening thing we already talked about, Jude Law it just like is there to be there, and they just want to subvert the expectation that he's the actual bad guy. I honestly, here's another huge complaint: stop de-aging actors. Just get a different actor. I get that you want it to be Samuel L. Jackson, but like, go find Samuel L. Jackson's son and have him play the role. Go find another young, talented actor who you can put a little bit of makeup on and make look kind of like Samuel Jackson. I don't want to watch a 70-year-old man run around as if he's actually 30. That's bullshit. And it's annoying and it's stupid. And so like, I hated that. Clark Gregg looked like his face was painted the entire movie. And so, yeah, that really bothered me. And that really took away from the viewing experience for me. It's kind of why I
didn't
watch The Irishman.
Yeah, this is that time where, I mean, these are all movies that came out that year, right?
Yeah, The Irishman came out that year as well, right?
Yep. And what, this is right after, what was the big de-aging one? All the Star Trek or Star Wars stuff, right? With like Rogue One and everything like that.
It was Rogue One where they brought in, what was his name?
Peter Cushing.
Peter Cushing. Yeah, that was 2016. Yeah. That was actually
quite. But like, that's what they were doing. This is why we had a writer strike and an actor strike where people feared AI, because things like this were happening in the industry.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's a problem. I mean, it's a problem. And look, I love Samuel Jackson. Again, Samuel Jackson, another one of my all-time favorite actors. And so now you have a movie that I can't stand to watch that is Samuel Jackson and Annette Bening. And it really bothered me too. Like, I liked Brie Larson until Brie Larson's head got massive because she was like, I'm hot shit and now I'm better than everybody. But I liked Brie Larson in her first early roles. I mean, Short Term 12, she is phenomenal. Room, she is amazing. But when I sit there and I watch this movie and I'm like, she's the only Oscar winner in this movie. That really bothers me. Great actors in this movie.
And that's the thing is, like, Brie Larson, one of the things that does irk me about this movie, you've already mentioned it, the writing of this movie, because Brie Larson is capable of acting so much better than she does in this movie, but she's given absolutely nothing with this script. And part of that is this idea, I get it, like, you're trying to make this character who's been raised by this alien, who has been a part of this alien race that doesn't have emotions, that she's being told that she has to suppress her emotions because it, like, stops her powers and everything like that, right? But we need something from this character still. We need something to latch onto, because right now, this character, who is the strongest character in the Marvel universe, is just so boring.
Yeah. Yeah, that's the best way to describe it. Her character, she's a nothing burger. There's nothing happening. And I think that's what frustrates me, right? So at the time, look, again, I don't know anything about these comic books, so I'm not going to sit here and pretend like, you know, I know that there was outrage, air quotes, that Brie Larson was going to be playing Captain Marvel, you know, and I know internationally there actually was outrage over that. But I know that in the US, there was the fake outrage, right? It's got to be right versus left, left versus right. That's what everybody in America needs to do. They can't help themselves on every single topic. So I know that there was outrage. I'm sitting there and I'm like, why would you not put a best actress winner 4 years off of, you know, a phenomenal performance in the lead role? Of course you would do that. But as I was watching it today, I'm like, you would think that she was stupid. You would think she couldn't act. There was nothing happening there. You would think that she was an unimportant character. And they have, like, every time she goes, oh, I did a photon blast. And that's what I did. Her, the lines, like, outside of the blockbuster, whatever she says to Samuel L. Jackson, I wanted to throw a pillow across the wall. Honestly, I wanted to throw a brick across the room. But instead, I wanted to just throw a pillow because that was what was in within reach. But it was like, what is that line? Like, what is she doing? And she was so bland and it was so monotone. And that's not what Brie Larson is. And that is what bothered me the most. It was almost like they said, okay, you're Captain Marvel. Play it the way you played your character in Room. What? Wait, what? What are we talking about here? That should not be, but it was like, be that, like, soulless. There was just nothing to it. And I get that she's not really human and she's whatever, but still. It's kind of like when they remade the Lion King movie and they made it live action, air quotes, even though it was like 99% animated and they don't have the lion smile. So you can't really see their emotions. Sometimes you need to not make things be so over. Don't get so caught up in the minor details and start to make it like what's going to make this the best movie. And Carol Danvers should have been so much more interesting. And I think that's what frustrated me even more is when she's talking to Fury. And they're having the little conversations and they're saying whatever. It's like, okay, come on. Like, say it with one more time with feeling, right? Like one more time with feeling, one more time with feeling, please, for the love of God, one more time with feeling. She just wasn't doing it. And it's not Brie Larson, right? Like, it's not, but maybe part of it is, I don't know. But when it said at the end, Captain Marvel will return in Endgame, I was like, why? Why is she going to return in Endgame? It would be so much better if she did.
Well, we have interesting things to talk about that next week when we actually get to Endgame, because I have some interesting facts about Captain Marvel in that movie. But it's fun. I find it really funny that you're like ragging on the Skrull makeup, because I actually kind of enjoy the Skrull makeup. And I enjoy the fact that last 2 weeks ago, you were harping on the fact that Thanos was CGI. They give us actual makeup aliens, and now you're complaining about that too.
Yeah, well, no, but okay. I get it. That's a fair point. That's a fair point. John is raising his voice at me. I need to calm down. But here's my thing. This was the most generic, and maybe this is how it looks in the comics. I don't care. It is so unbelievably generic, and that's what bothered me about it. It is so unbelievably generic. Thanos, they're going for the look. I just don't think Thanos is going to age well. Look, Thanos, but I don't think it's going to age well. I think in 10 years, people are going to look back and be like, what's Purple Man doing? Purple, as they say, ball sack in the movie. What is he doing? But in this one, it just frustrated me because it almost felt like, remember that that TV movie of Goosebumps, The Mask, where he can't take the mask off?
Yeah,
that's what this looks like. It looks like that. And I'm sitting there and I'm like, but this is a Marvel movie. And it felt like it was alien looking just to be alien looking, you know, and sometimes you do that in crappy sci-fi shows or in low budget sci-fi movies. And in a Marvel movie, I feel like there could have been a more interesting look to this. This looked really cheesy to me.
So don't forget, this is a character that was developed in the 60s in Marvel Comics, right? This is what Skrulls look like. This is what Skrulls have always looked like.
Update it. I mean, that, like, I'm sorry, but at this point, like, because obviously that paved the way then, right, for what these types of characters are going to look like in movies, but update it. I mean, you have to take a little bit in there, and I don't know, it just feels like a cop-out to me, because when they all come running out on the ship or whatever they're on, and they all come running out, like, the whole family of Skrulls, I'm, like, sitting there, and I'm like, am I watching, like, 1990s Star Trek? Like, is that what am I watching a TV show right now?
I'm sorry. Are you jumping on 1990s Star Trek right now?
This isn't crapping on 1990s Star Trek. It's asking, why does the makeup look the same as TV show 1990s Star Trek? It shouldn't. It should be so much better. And it wasn't. And that's not a knock. There's something homey about 1990s, like sci-fi and everything like that. You have an excuse. There's no excuse. You got to build this up. You got to make it better. It's not better. It's bad, John. bad.
It's becoming more clear. Like we're at the point in the MCU where it's becoming more very clear. They care less and less about visual effects.
I agree.
And just like any of that type of thing. Because we talked about it with Infinity War, where everything is done on a soundstage.
Yeah.
And it's very clearly done in a soundstage because they're not interacting with the environment at all, right? And like we're at a point now where it's fading into caution stuff. I will get to a point that I do hate in this movie. I hate the coloration of this like Kree uniform.
Why is it like that?
Yeah, it's just so boring.
Yeah.
That's what I feel like this movie's biggest crime is it's so boring.
Yeah.
But again, why I'm so apathetic towards it. And I don't have these things where I'm like, I hate this part of this movie because it's just boring. And like, it doesn't feel like I need to invest time into hating this movie.
Yeah. I'm looking at the other thing that really bothers me, and this is starting to become a thing in these later ones, is that like, we need this person to be a certain species, make them blue. Okay. We need a certain species, make them green, make them red. It's like, okay, cool. Go through Roy G. Biv real quick. And let's make sure we get every single color of the rainbow.
Yeah.
But also like, that's the defining characteristic of these characters. If you go and look on Letterboxd right now, I made my movie poster, the blue lady. I don't even remember her from the movie. I don't remember a single thing she did, but I made her the blue lady.
Gemma Chan's character.
Yeah, they allowed me to make that character be the poster. But, like, is her defining characteristic that she's blue? It kind of feels like it. And it feels like, oh, he's on the ship, and they're all just, like, different colors. And Jaiman Hansu? Really? This is what we got Jaiman Hansu into the Marvel Cinematic Universe for? Really?
No, he's already been in the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Which movie was he in prior to this?
He was in Guardians of the Galaxy playing this same character.
Oh, so he was playing this character. Okay.
Yes.
Okay. I remembered him being in it.
It's not like Gemma Chan, who's going to play a different character in four movies.
And we're supposed to just forget that. We're supposed to just forget that ever happened. But
it's okay. She was blue in this movie. She's not blue in the other one. You have no idea they're the same person.
Yeah, that's the thing that bothers me is like, they're just like, here's a different colored person. Therefore, they are an alien from a different planet. And you're supposed, that's how you're going to differentiate them. It's lazy. Yep. Differentiate them based on the color of their alien skin. Awesome. That's it. That's what we're doing, so that you can figure out what character is which.
Let's get a little nitpicky with that now. Because some of these Kree are blue, and some of them just look like humans.
I know. I don't get it.
Jude Law is just Jude Law, and I get it. He's a handsome man, and you don't need to obscure him in blue. But like, we had Lee Pace come back to play his character from Guardians of the Galaxy, and he looked, I couldn't even tell it was still Lee Pace.
I know. I honestly. So here's the thing, right? Who's famous? Let's ask that. Jaiman Hansu, pretty recognizable. Gladiator, he's in Blood Diamond, big name. Jude Law, very recognizable. Samuel L. Jackson, obviously. Brie Larson, obviously. Ben Mendelsohn, to a point. Let's give him some face time because this was not too long after Animal Kingdom and things like that. And the first season of Bloodline. So let's give him some face time. At the time, Gemma Chan, not that famous. Let's make her a different color. Let's just make her blue, and we'll go from there. And I feel like that's what they did. It was like the less famous you were, the less recognizable you were going to be, but they had to make the people that you were going to come to the movie to see be recognizable. So again, it's lazy. It's just like, yeah, we want you to know it's that person. So I don't know, man. I don't know. This was bad. I really, really could not stand this movie.
Well, hopefully next week's 3-hour epic will be a little more tasteful for you.
Yeah, I know. I can't wait for the extended edition of Yorgos Lanthimos, Poor Things. That's what you're talking about, right?
Yes, of course.
Yeah, I'm curious how I'll like Endgame. I haven't really liked any of the Avengers movies to this point, so I am curious how I'll like Endgame now that pretty much every character who's been introduced since that movie I haven't liked. But we'll see. We'll see. I'm going in with an open mind. I really am. I'm trying to go into all these movies with an open mind. And you can see that in my reviews. Because when I had set out to do this, I was like, I hate Marvel movies. And that is going to be the case. And if you look at it, up to this point, I have ranked, let me just see, I want to give you the correct number here. I've given 13 of the 21 movies 2.5 stars or more. That's above average. 2.5 stars or more, 13 of the 21. Sure. But I am not going to shy away when it's atrocious. And Captain Marvel has officially taken the bottom spot for me. And I pray that there's not one that I hate more than this, because if there is, I might just quit podcasting.
We'll see. We'll see.
Yeah, I might just quit podcasting. But you have anything else you want to say, or can I go eat dinner?
I do want to comment on Jude Law, because there's something very interesting that I noted at the end of this movie. Jude Law's character is still alive. Has not come back in the MCU. In fact, I don't think there's any intention to bring him back in the MCU. But they killed Killmonger.
And which one's Killmonger?
That was Michael B. Jordan in Black Panther.
Yeah, I know. I know. Isn't that great? They killed Michael B. Yeah, I know.
There's this like lack of consistency where the comic book thing of it, where you can't kill a character, but the movie thing where you kind of need to kill a character, and they're conflicting. And we're beginning to get to a point where it's becoming obvious that they're conflicting, and they're just kind of willy-nilly choosing who they're going to do it to.
Yeah, that's a very fair point. That is a very fair point. And I do agree with you on that. God, John. Yeah, I don't know. Here we go. We'll see what ends up happening here.
We're about to hit phase four, and that's considered the worst part of the MCU.
Well, I mean, the good news is, John, it's like I used to be a cross country runner, track runner, you know, did that all through high school and college. Yeah. And you would go and you'd do these mile repeats, and the coach would be like, you're going to do 6 mile repeats today. And the first one sucked, and the second one sucked. But what you could start telling yourself after the third one was, I'm almost done. I'm almost done. And even though you were in agonizing pain, and you knew that you were going to be in a lot of agony for like the day after and everything like that, you also knew it was almost over. And that's how I feel right now. Because for Patreon, and I'll talk about it now, because we're going to be doing over to Cinema Specialist, as we've discussed, and as we've, you know, started to hype up a little bit. Go follow us over on Twitter. We are the Cinema Specialist. It's the handle is Movie SPCLSTS. So it's Movie and then Specialist without the vowels. But for Patreon, starting on January 2nd, the first Tuesday, we're going to be doing $5 Tuesdays. And we already lined up our movies for what $5 Tuesdays are going to be. The Patreon preview episode will be coming out. I think it's on, I have it written down here. Let me check. I have like six different calendars. On January 9th, we'll be doing the Patreon preview episode. So if you're not sure you want to become a patron, you can check out that episode, hear us talk about it, see if you maybe want to do it. But really what we're doing over there is we're hitting movies that are having huge anniversaries in 2024. Mm-hmm. That's not always what $5 Tuesdays is going to be. We haven't decided exactly what else we're going to do, but it's for $5 tier patrons and higher. So if you want to be a $10 patron or a $20 patron, $10 patrons will get the Oscar breakdown too. I'm going to be doing a whole episode on this on Christmas Eve. So if you want to listen to that, that's going to tell you all about what the future of this channel is going to look like. But it's going to be a lot of fun movies, and there's a lot of really good movies that are hitting big anniversaries coming up in 2024. And we have already planned out what our first five episodes are going to be. I've watched three of those movies. So if you want to check out my Letterboxd and try to piece together what those movies are going to be, I will hint that that 2024 is either the anniversary either ends in a zero or a five, meaning it's either like 10th, 15th, 20th.
So, yeah.
So start to look at the years, and you can probably very easily piece together which three movies I have watched that we are going to be doing for that. But that's going to be really fun. And it's so much easier to watch those movies than it is to watch Captain Marvel. So I'm excited for that. And that's going to be a really good time. So consider becoming a patron, patreon.com/thespecialist, THE specialist. It's also, the link is in the description of the video here. Like this video, leave comments, subscribe. There's going to be a lot more movie content that's going to be coming out for patrons. And, you know, John and I will keep doing our weekly thing here. Year end is coming up next Friday. But before that, next Wednesday, we're going to be doing Endgame and Poor Things. So we'll be talking about both of those and then doing our year in review on next Friday. Did I miss anything?
I don't think so. I think that's all we have for now. It's a lot. It's going to be a fun time. There's so much stuff coming out. We're really going to make it worth everyone's while.
Yeah, it's going to be really good. I'm really excited for what the Patreon is going to be. And the added bonus is, if you're a Survivor fan on top of the movies, that the Patreon is just going to be an explosion of great content. So be excited for that. There's going to be so much, and it really is going to be so worth your while in the new year. So anyway, that's what I got. Thank you all so much for listening. We will talk to you next week.